Christ. Let it rain. Let it rain dollars for Christ. More, more, more. And the beast shall rise out of the pit and walk among the world. And great, great will be the devastation and desolation. And I tell you, woe to the man who is without the Lord. And woe to the man and woe to the woman who has not given generously to this ministry, who has not dug deep and sent cash or check to this anti-beast brigade of true believers who are girding now for battle. I beg you, send your dollars to Jesus now.
Good evening and welcome to the fourth edition of the IRG's radio show, Bite Me. Tonight in the studio, we've got Binary. We've got Thomas Icom. I'm your host, Mercenary. And over on production, we've got Sin Anarchy. And also in the studio with us tonight is Hackdog, as usual. Let's see. A few things I'd like to talk about first tonight in the news. In the news tonight, we've got that Carnegie Mellon University has announced that they are forming their own anti-hacking institute to be called the Carnegie Mellon Institute for Survivable Systems. It seems that they are soliciting private as well as federal funds for this project, and we here at the IRG feel that for every action taken against the hacker world, an equal and opposite reaction is in order. That's why we are pleased to announce that Black Ice...
Ice baby!
...has formed his own institute for the Black Ice Institute for Back Entry Systems, where students will learn the latest in rear entry of all major backdoor programs. Interested parties of the female persuasion should contact Black Ice directly at black_ice@irg.org. And let's see, also in the news tonight, we have that a group of reservist DOD web watchers has found as many as 1,300 discrepancies online where classified info has been posted online at DOD sites. Well, I hate to tell you DOD folks this, but this has been known by the scanner underground for a long time, and these frequencies are known by almost everybody, and they're posted on so many websites now, it's almost ridiculous. But don't worry about your freaks. Any 15-year-old with a scanner already is aware of them, so you guys have fun and keep watching those websites. Now, the other subject of interest I'd like to talk tonight about is voicemail hacking. I came across an interesting system the other day, and I know a lot of people have been sending me email on voicemail systems, and you have to remember that the corporate world is not that bright. It seems that one of the systems I was helping somebody work on was just using some simple six-word passwords. Now, he had tried all the standard. He'd tried names. He'd tried numbers, but they were using a combination of both. Little research into the target provided some interesting information. Seems what they were using were the first two initials of every employee, and then they were just using the standard 1234. So, like, if it was Greg Smith, it would be GS1234. I hope this helps a couple of the people that sent me email on the subject, and you might want to try looking into the things. Check out their websites, if you have to, dumpster dive them. But check out your target, learn the employees' names, learn their habits. And interesting note on the target that we were looking at was they were also using the same passwords for their computer systems. Well, that's all I've really got to say for the beginning of the show tonight. I'd like to turn the microphone over to Thomas Icom now. And here he is, without any further ado.
Good evening. This is Thomas Icom, and you are listening to the International Information Retrieval Guild's program, Bite Me. We have many subjects to discuss this evening, and we'll start with some news stories on infrastructure. What is infrastructure? Well, this is the latest Clintonista term that you'll be hearing a lot of in the future as they continue to take a dump on the Constitution and the Bill of Rights. That word, infrastructure, is going to be a key word in attacks against survivalist technological enthusiast hackers and other threats to their totalitarian New World Order. In the head totalitarian's own words, critical infrastructures are those physical and cyber-based systems essential to the minimum operations of the economy and government. These systems are so vital that their incapacity or destruction would have a debilitating impact on the defense or economic security of the United States. Now, that came straight from President William J. Clinton in Presidential Decision Directive 63 and Executive Order 13010. They've further subdivided it down into information and communications, banking and finance, water supply, transportation, that does include highways, emergency services, public health services, continuity of government services, electrical power, and oil and gas production storage. And one of the interesting things about this is that all the anti-hacker news stories you've been seeing and statements by the feds, that's all infrastructure protection going on. Anyway, the first article that we have came from yesterday's Hartford Current. It's entitled Early Alert About Power, appeared in the April 25th, 2000 edition of the Hartford Current by Susan E. Kinsman. Essentially, what this article went into was that the U.S. Energy Secretary, Bill Richardson, indicated that he fears the possibility of service interruptions during the predicted long, hot summer ahead. Take this as you will, but I look at that as a harbinger of things to come. You would gather from reading this article that you might expect to see a few brownouts at the very least, and possibly even quite a few power outages in the Connecticut area, actually in New England, this summer. But we shall see what happens. Another infrastructure-related story is not in the papers, believe it or not, and it didn't appear in any newspaper or on any TV station, but just before the Easter holiday, customers belonging to credit unions and banks in Connecticut lost the ability to transact business via ATM machines. That's right, no money from cash machines. According to customer service representatives we contacted, they said, quote, the server went down, unquote, and the service started disruptions in Wednesday. We were told that it would be restored Monday. Actually, it was restored Saturday of last week. But it's real interesting because you would think that there was some redundancy placed in the system. And again, that's just another harbinger of things that are come, we believe. Now on to topics of totalitarianism. We overheard Connecticut's premier scumbag liberal, Senator Dodd, talking about the Elion case. Now I'm sure most of you have already now seen the classic picture of the government thug with the HKMP5. That's a weapon that's apparently okay for federal agents to wave in people's faces, but not okay for law-abiding citizens to possess. Now, I normally wouldn't talk about the Elion cases. I feel they should just throw his ass on the first boat going south, but Senator Dodd made me do it. He made a comment about the Elion case, which specifically was, we have better things to worry about, like gun control. Well, screw you, you liberal scumbag. Apparently, this good senator thinks it's okay for his hired drones to pack automatic weapons and use them against people who disagree with the government, and apparently, he believes that the Second Amendment and people who believe in it are a threat to whatever totalitarian schemes he wants to implement. Well, Connecticut, I say we vote this asshole out of office. In fact, I say we go even further than that. Since he's a public figure, we should place every aspect of his life under public scrutiny so we can ever uncover whatever wrongdoing he's probably up to. I'm sure he's doing something because he's a degenerate liberal, and therefore we can impeach his ass. We should first start with a thorough questioning of Janet Peckinpah. Well, like the bumper sticker on my father-in-law's truck says, empty the prisons, make room for Congress. Well, enough of the political stuff. I really don't like to get into that, but sometimes you just have to. We're going to talk about a few more practical things. We're going to start in the low-tech department, and we're going to discuss some two very low-cost knives that I've come across. I've used both, and so far they've proven to be excellent little pieces of steel. The first one is designed by Ed Halligan, and it's manufactured by Columbia River Knife Company, Columbia River Knife and Tool. And he developed a series of blades which he calls his KISS blades, which stands for Keep It Super Simple. And I acquired his Stiff KISS. It's a fixed blade with a tanto point. It's only about 7 1/4 inches wide and weighs about 2.0 ounces. It's has a full-size handle and has some nice features. Finger index notch, friction grooves on the top and the bottom of the handle. You can get it in either a conventional blade style or a combination half-plane blade, half-serrated. And it's got a few nice features. It has a Zytel sheath, which can be worn several different ways. You have a belt or boot clip that you can attach to the sheath. It comes with a length of paracord, which you can thread through the sheath to wear it around your neck, or to get a better grip on the skeletonized metal handle, you can wrap it around the handle. And you can it also comes with a belt adapter with two Chicago screws, so you can attach this belt adapter to the sheath, and you can carry it in the small of your back, either above or below your waist. Again, it's in the $20 price range, and it's a very nice little knife. It's been one of the first things I've reached for in my day-to-day work on the job, and I've been very, very happy with it. It's definitely worth throwing in your collection if you're looking for an inexpensive working blade. This features about a 4.5-inch blade length. Now, if you're looking for a full-size survival-type knife, Cold Steel has a really, really excellent blade called the Bushman. It's 12.25 inches long with a 7-inch blade length. It's made out of SK5 high-carbon steel, and it's a hollow handle. And basically, the knife, the Bushman, is made out of a single piece of steel. And what they've done is the handle is just an integral part of the blade. It's just, wrapped around to, give you a hollow handle. And it's very, very no frills, very, very basic. Razor sharp, and it's carbon steel, which means you can sharpen it very easily, and does hold a fairly good edge. And again, this is another, $20, blade that's of excellent quality. Of course, it comes with Cold Steel's, lifetime guarantee. And the hollow handle is quite interesting because you can use it to, store various items in a survival kit. You could also attach a length of a broom handle or a sapling to it and use it as a spear if that's what you want, or, just give you a little extra handling for a little leverage. Anyway, I highly recommend both those blades, and if you're looking for a good working knife, I'd check either or both of those blades out. Okay, going on to other things, we're going to talk a little bit more about the wireless underground network, NewNet, the New England Network, and a couple more aspects of it. The first thing is your commo specialists. Now, although we don't necessarily recommend you operate on the ham bands, we do recommend that the commo specialist of your group possess at least a technician class license, and preferably a general class license. Reason behind that is that technician class amateur radio license and above gives you privileges on the VHF and UHF amateur bands, which you can legitimately use to test communications paths and the such when you're setting up your network. We, for the same reason, we recommend that backbone operators possess at least a general class amateur license, because that thing gives you HF privileges on shortwave, which is where your backbone is going to be running because of the worldwide characteristics of the shortwave bands. A couple things you should look for while you're setting up the network is look for old, inexpensive laptops. Your basic 8086, 286, 386 laptops that you can pick up for $25, $30 a piece at hamfests and electronics flea markets. I mean, that's all you really need to get on the network. That, a TNC, and a radio. And, hey, if you've got to put this equipment in a remote location, it's not a big loss if you lose it. On the same note, you should also look for solar panels, as they're probably the easiest way to get an alternative energy system up and running You can use the solar panels to maintain a constant trickle charge on the lead-acid or gel cell batteries you should also be looking for. You run a solar panel, trickle charging a gel cell battery that's hooked into your equipment setup, and you've got a power source that'll run independently of the grid for quite a long time. Other things you should look for are locations above average terrain. And if they have electrical service, that's a plus, because those locations above average terrain are going to give you a greater range for your network. And, they don't necessarily have to be a location that's easily reached, but you should just note how to get to some of your local mountaintops. The other thing you should look for is DOS software. Because some of these laptops, if they're 8086s or 286s, well, Windows just takes up a little too much memory for what you're going to be doing. There's a lot of good DOS applications out there, and in future issues of Bite Me and future articles of Fantasy, we're going to be talking about some of the DOS applications you're going to want to find. Believe it or not, DOS is still available. Caldera Corporation, and they are accessible on the web, is still offering DRDOS, Digital Research DOS. They intend it for use in certain dedicated PC applications, but hey, we could use it for our purposes as well. Now, as far as the frequency bands go, there are several different frequency bands that you can set up your network on. You have the HF band. HF stands for high frequency, and this is your traditional shortwave band from 1.8 to 30 megahertz. That'll give you worldwide signal coverage 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, depending on the frequency band you choose. Generally speaking, between 1.8 to 10 gigahertz is primarily offers worldwide coverage at night. 10 to 25 megahertz is generally good all day round, depending on what the band conditions are like, but it's not as good, specific night or daytime bands. And if you want to get out during the daytime, your best bet is to look at 15 to 30 megahertz. Now, these are just generalized guidelines, and to really optimize your range, your best bet is to check your propagation forecasts. You can get those by listening to the time station, WWV, at 2.5, 5, 10, and 15 megahertz. You can also get them off the ARRL's website at www.arrl.org. Now, when you start getting into the higher frequency bands, ham band-wise, you have the 6-meter band, which is at 50 to 54 megahertz, which is adjacent to the 30 to 50 megahertz land mobile band. That's a good regional frequency band. It works real well in rural areas, and your average transceiver that's running 25-30 watts, that'll kick out a good 50 to 75 miles depending on your terrain on that frequency band in the country. That one's really good for setting up regional networks. Going above that, you have the 144 to 148 megahertz amateur band, which is also known as 2 meters. That band is kind of like a suburban or rural frequency band. It's primarily designed as a tactical band for local coverage, although you could use it for regional coverage depending on where you had your digipeater set up. That one just happens to also be adjacent to the 148 to 174 land mobile frequency band. Another good suburban rural band that doesn't see much use ham band wise is the 220 to 225 megahertz band. There really isn't much land mobile equipment out there in that band because there is a land mobile band on the low end of 220 megahertz. I think 220 to 222 is a land mobile band, but it was the FCC has it assigned for narrowband technologies such as amplitude companion sideband, which you don't see on the ham bands. So there really isn't any commercial equipment available that you can swing over the band like you can on some other ham bands. Most HABs, if they're looking for a UHF band, are running on the 430 to 450 megahertz, the 70 centimeter band, which has excellent urban coverage and happens to be adjacent to the 450 to 470 megahertz land mobile band. So there's plenty of commercial equipment out there that you can modify for ham use. Above that, you start getting into the 902 to 928 megahertz ham band, which is also used for license-free devices. That's a band to keep an eye on. Has more line-of-sight characteristics than some of the lower frequency bands, but hey, you might want to give it a try. Above that, well, you've got 2 gigahertz and 10 gigahertz in the microwave bands, and also lasers, which are excellent bands for point-to-point links and systems that are being designed with a low probability of intercept. Now, I'm not saying that you should set up your underground network on the ham bands, and if you do happen to set up a digipeater on the ham band, I hope you're licensed and you abide by the necessary FCC regulations. However, hams through RACES and ARIES do have a history of disaster preparedness communications, so that's something to keep in mind. And hey, if your network can help out, some fellow hams operating in RACES and ARIES, that's a good thing. Well, that's all I have for this evening. We're going to swing it back over to Mercenary now, and have a good night.
Thanks, Tom. I just got an email from Elena Bobbitt. She loved your knife review. Now we're going to turn the microphone over to Binary, who's going to continue his series from last week. So without further ado, here he is.
This is Binary. Last week I began to talk about DSL and the different standards involved. This week we'll be talking about the method of delivery involved with DSL, the local loop. The local loop is a pair of wires moderately twisted for the entire length between the telephone company's end office and the user's end premises, which, combined with the common telephone set, forms a loop, and so it is referenced to as the local loop. This loop provides a user with access to the global telecommunications infrastructure that is installed all over the world. The local loop has been historically designed to provide voice-grade audio service. The loop circuit is powered from the central office with 48 volts, open circuit voltage, limited in current, to a value somewhat higher than 20 milliamps. This current is used for signaling phone access, burning off moisture, breaking through metallic oxides caused by corrosion, and powering a carbon microphone. The original telephone equipment contained no active electronics. The actual wiring of the local loop may be considered to be a lossy transmission line. DSL uses whatever frequencies will propagate on this line for purposes of digital data transmission. T1 modulation, or alternative MAR conversion, has been doing this for years. DSL extends this capability by using modern technology to increase the data rates of distance span. Since the local loop was designed for voice communications, the loop needs to be conditioned for DSL service. Some of the obstacles encountered on a standard line that will affect DSL service are bridge taps. A bridge tap is an accidental connection of another local loop to the primary local loop. Generally behaves as an open circuit at DC, but becomes a transmission line stub with adverse conditions at high frequency. Is generally harmful to DSL connections and should be removed. Extra phone wiring within one's house is a combination of a short bridge tap. A pot splitter isolates the house wiring and provides a direct path for the DSL signal to pass unimpaired to the ATUR modem. I'll be discussing the function of the pot splitter in a later program. Another common problem to DSL is loading coils. Loading coils are used to extend the range of the local loop for voice-grade communications. They are inductors added in series with the phone line, which compensate for parallel capacitance of the line. They benefit the frequencies in the high end of the voice spectrum at the expensive frequencies above 3.6 kHz. Thus, loading coils prevent DSL connections. The last item encountered to a POTS line are echo suppressors and echo cancellers. These are active devices used by the phone company to suppress the reflection of an analog signal or positive feedback, singing, on the phone network. The effect of the echo on the voice connection is undesirable. Imagine that you spoke into the microphone and there was a short delay and you hear your own voice back over the earpiece. The soft echo that comes back fast enough is not bothersome to the average person. A more delayed echo could be just annoying. An echo suppressor works by allowing only one direction to transmit at a time, so it is entirely to eliminate the effect of an echo. An echo suppressor is able to switch between each end very rapidly, typically within 5 milliseconds. Network echo suppressors make full duplex communication impossible. However, modems can deactivate these devices by sending a 21 kHz answer tone at the beginning of the connection. An echo canceller subtracts a locally generated replica of the predicted echo based on the signal propagating in the forward direction. Echo cancellers do not allow full duplex operation and are generally preferred over echo suppressors in voice calls. But when network echo cancellators compete with echo cancellers within the modem, they are problematic. Typically, they reduce data rates to 1900 baud or lower. Network echo cancellers are deactivated by placing 180-degree phase reversals every 450 milliseconds on the answer tone. As long as the carrier is maintained, they are supposed to remain deactivated. DSL is not affected by echo suppressors or cancellers because they are part of the codec signal processing. What is a codec? Codec is an abbreviation for coder-decoder. Specifically, it converts a voice-grade analog signal to ULAR-ALAR encoded samples in an 8 kHz sampling rate. DSL bypasses the codec to the central office by separating the DSL signal and voice frequencies in a postulator. The voice signal is passed to the codec while the DSL signal terminates in the DSLAM, the DSL equivalent of the codec. Again, I will get into what a DSL DSLAM is in a later program. On a side note, SNET still hasn't delivered my DSL service. Maybe next week I'll actually begin to discuss implementing it. Well, that's enough of my ramblings. Here's Mercenary.
Closing tonight, a few more commentary items I'd like to bring to your attention. Let's see, the first one is the Cuban protesters down in Miami. Just like if any of you are happening to be listening to Miami, I'd just like to give you one little word of advice. Has anyone ever down there ever heard of an army surplus store and perhaps heard of a gas mask? You can pick up the Israeli surplus ones for about $9.99, and I think some of you may seriously want to start looking at, returning some of those 40-ounce beer bottles and buying one. But on to another issue. Somebody sent me some email about our Commodore archive section on the IRG.org website. I'd just like to let you know I don't have your email address handy at the moment, but I'd just like to let you know that the programs you were looking for, we've posted up, and hope you have fun with them. Now, in my final comments in closing, this is a little something that we promised on our IRC channel earlier tonight. It's come to our attention that Black Ice, who was unable to be here with us tonight, finally went out and earned his Red Wings last night. So in the stylings of Biker Joe Warren, we'd like to offer this song to Black Ice, and congratulations. And remember, you girls out there, that's black_ice@irg.org.
Wish that she had told me before we took the fall. There's certain things a man should know before he gets involved. And I was so unselfishly giving of myself. She said she had a secret, but that she would not tell. Well, last night I got my Red Wings for the first time. Last night I finally became a man. Last night I got my Red Wings for the first time. I think I've had all of the romance I can stand. Her love for me was so sincere, it was hard not to believe. To think that I was such a fool, that I could be deceived. No, you could not imagine my feelings of disgrace. When I looked into the mirror, it was written on my face. Well, last night I got my Red Wings for the first time. Last night I finally became a man. that I got my red wings for the first time. I think I've had all of the romance I can stand. Oh, last night I got my red wings for the first time. And last night I finally became a man. Last night I got my red wing for the first time. I think I've had all of the romance I can stand. Last night I got my red wings for the first time.
Ice, ice, baby.
Nah.